Vestekov played it out. Leafs regain possession. And Tavares back out there. Kerfoot gets it into the Detroit zone. Won't be long now. The Willis turnover scores! And there's one for Mitch Marner to end the drought. And he'll take it any way he gets it.
That was Saturday, Mitch Marner scoring. Mitch Marner scoring last night as well. Austin Matthews with a pair of the Maple Leafs beat the Vegas Golden Knights by a score of 4-0. Jack Campbell picks up the shutout there. Quick news from around the NHL. The headline right now, Mike Sullivan, head coach of the Pittsburgh Penguins, announcing Sidney Crosby and Brian Dumoulin have COVID. We'll get into that a little bit later on here on the program. Mike Zeisberger joining me from NHL.com. So, like, okay, I know that, you know, the joke is, oh, the Maple Leafs beat the Henderson Silver Knights last night. That was the American Hockey League team. Like, we know the Vegas Golden Knights are an injured crew right now. And Elliot Friedman making the point a couple of seconds ago that it seems as if Alex Pietrangelo was trying to plug every hole right now in the good ship Vegas. But what did you make of the Maple Leafs effort, not just last night, but the Maple Leafs effort the last couple of games? They certainly look like a better team, albeit, you know, winning games against, you know, bottom teams and teams that have been banged up. But I guess they say you got to win the games that are presented to you.
Dude, let's put some things in perspective here. It's only 10 days earlier that the Toronto Maple Leafs lost 7-1 to the Wilkes-Barre Penguins. You know, and that sure was the game. And, you know, hopefully we wish Dumoulin and Sid all the best in their you know, you brought up the fact that they had tested positive for COVID. In that particular game, the Pittsburgh Penguins did not have Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Jeff Carter, I believe Brian Rust, and Brian no Letang either. And they lost 7-1. I mean, that was, you know, that was as close as to, you know, the scorched earth syndrome in the GTA as I've seen in a while. People were panicking. People equated it to 2 years earlier, Jeff, about this time of year, when the Toronto Maple Leafs had a loss like that that seemed to be very unemotional. And Mike Babcock was fired less than a week later. So, yes, I understand people say, you know, they lost to the Henderson Golden Knights. They beat the Henderson Golden Knights last night, and there is some credibility to that. But, you know, for a team that wasn't even beating these shorthanded teams a couple of weeks ago, it's very, very important to keep in mind that you've got to win those games, and they weren't winning those. And I think more than that, Jeff, after that first period in Chicago last week, when they were down 2-0, and I guess Wayne Simmons peeled the paint off the walls in a speech to his team. The Toronto Maple Leafs have been a lot better. They won in Chicago. They won in Detroit against Detroit on Saturday. There was a little that game was a little loosey goosey in terms of defensively, but they shut it down last night. So look, there's a saying in football that you can only win the games that are on your schedule. And, you know, whether the other teams are shorthanded or not, the Leafs have to take care of their own business. They weren't doing it early in the season, and they are now. So you got to get points when you can. And I do notice an upward trend in the way that they're playing.
From a fan's point of view here, with Mike Zeisberger of NHL.com, from a fan's point of view here, Mike, does it feel as if the playoff failures have eliminated any ability for a Maple Leafs fan to have any type of sustained joy based on anything they do in the regular season? Because the caveat is always there. Well, it's a regular season and that's fine, but
yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
No, I think you're bang on. And so the saying is, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. What happens if you've been fooled four times? And that's been the situation with this core, that they, actually, if you go back, it's I guess it would be five times. I mean, I don't think that anybody expected them the first year when they played the Washington Capitals. They were underdogs in that, but then you go two first rounds against the Boston Bruins, the play-in round against the Columbus Blue Jackets, which I think changed the narrative, Jeff, because the Leafs were so much more talented than that Columbus team, and yet they were just, you know, it was very frustrating to watch. And then, you know, the icing on the sour cake was last year against Montreal, where they were up 3-1 and it all went south, especially in game 7. So I think it's very accurate. I think that, you know, this isn't a one-time thing or a two-time thing. This fan base has been put through this five times. And so, you know what? April can't come quick enough. The issue with that is when you start having struggles like the Maple Leafs did early on, there comes to be a mixture of anger and panic about, well, are we going to, you know, we're waiting for April to come. What happens if they don't make it to April? And look, I mean, you know, I think that's one of the big underlying fears in the fan base here, is that if this team were somehow to find a way not to make the playoffs. And look, I mean, anytime you're in a division with Tampa and Florida and the Boston Bruins, you know, teams mm-hmm. like Detroit are on the upswing. And then you never know about the crossover, because look at how good the Metro Division teams are playing. I think there's a lot of angst, Jeff. I really do.
With Mike Zeisberger here of NHL.com, Leafs win 4-0 over the Vegas Golden Knights last night. You were just talking to Elliot a second ago, and the conversation turned into, you know, are the Maple Leafs looking to do something with the right side of their blue line? You know, the obvious circled name, considering what we saw on Saturday specifically, would be Travis Dermott. You know, I think Timothy Liljegren is in the lineup, and I would think there to stay. I think Justin Hall eventually will get back into the game. But I wonder about Dermott here, and I think a lot of people do. A, where are you at on Travis Dermott? And B, where are you at on his future as a Maple Leaf, if indeed there is even is one?
You know, during one of the first few days of training camp, the subject of Travis Dermott came up with Coach Sheldon Keefe, and that he had, you know, offered the perspective of, you know, this guy has been given opportunities and it's his turn to grab it. I'm a big fan of the tools that Travis Dermott has. As nice a guy, as competitive a guy as you'll ever want to meet. He can play with a little bit of an edge, but I think what frustrates the organization is, you know, he has struggled with consistency, and some of his decision-making at times, you know, I remember somebody saying that, you know, a scout from another team saying to me that it's not that Travis Dermott makes more mistakes on average than some of the other guys on his team. He just seems to make them at the most inopportune time. So I think if you couple that with the fact that sometimes, and he hasn't shown it that much this season, but there has been times where the undisciplined penalties have kind of irked the organization. I really do think that you know, that we're at the point now where he's really going to have to prove himself in a short time, or it might be a case where, you know, a change of scenery is going to be better for both teams. I'm not saying that's in their plans, mm-hmm. but I do know there is a semblance of frustration in the organization with this player. I do think he's a National Hockey League caliber player and can bring something to a team. But like I said, sometimes a change of scenery is better for both sides.
You see, part of the frustrating thing too is you look at Travis Dermott and you look at, you know, what we want in hockey players right now, and
yeah,
you know, the first thing you notice is like, man, if you can't skate, there's really probably not a spot for you in the NHL, and that's Travis Dermott's strong suit. Like, he's a real nice skater. So, you know, part of the frustration, I'm sure, if you're Sheldon Keefe, Kyle Dubas, whomever with the Maple Leafs organization is, you know, do you want to give up on someone that can skate like that?
Like, yeah,
not everyone does.
I know. And you know, he's got, you know, when he's on his game, the compete level too, he's not afraid to go and grind in and go into those areas on the ice that, you know, maybe some of the Maple Leafs more finesse players don't go to. But again, Jeff, it's the decision making sometimes, which just kind of, you know, makes you wonder, because the tools are all there. The kid's got a big heart, and like we said, he's got the skills. But just the hockey sense sometimes and mistakes just seem to be magnified at the worst time. And like you said, when do you, you know, you fish or cut bait? When do you cut bait with somebody that has that skill set? And I think that's kind of what the Maple Leafs are going to have to weigh and probably already have been.
Has William Nylander won over the naysayers?
I really think he has. I think that the fact that, you know, I would argue if he wasn't the Maple Leafs' best player against the Montreal Canadiens back in the playoffs, then he was one of the top two or three, especially at a time where Marner and Matthews were struggling to score. I think that softened, you know, some of the hard feelings among the fan base. And I think, you know, all of a sudden they began to appreciate his skill set and his compete level more, which I think he has raised. But the other thing is, Jeff, you know, it wasn't that long ago that everybody was going like, oh, wow, look at the contract he signed. That's really out of whack. Two or three years later, let me volley this back into your court. How bad? To me, it doesn't look that bad right now. Actually, it doesn't look, you know, dare I say, pretty good.
I said it from day one with the Nylander contract. Watch what's going to happen in a couple. Remember, like, there was that time, Zeiss, when everybody in the NHL that was coming available as a restricted free agent coming out of entry level were getting $6 million deals, right? It was Nathan McKinnon, $6 million deal. Johnny Gaudreau, $6 million. Like, everybody was. And we all looked at that and we said, whoa, that is a huge number. Now we look at those numbers and we say, what a bargain. What a bargain for the teams. And I look at Nylander's contract, which is just a shade below seven right now. And when you consider where it was signed, what his production has been, I mean, here's a guy that you pencil in for what, 30 goals a year, 35 goals a year, play in your top six. He's still versatile and can play center in a pinch as well. I have about zero problems with the William Nylander contract, Mike. Zero.
Well, you know what? I've mentioned the word perspective several times during this hit. Think about this, Jeff, and we were both at the times we started this segment about how far back we go. So long ago, when we were both in different eras in our professional lives, after the Maple Leafs in 2002, I believe, had lost to the New Jersey Devils. And you talked about the $6 million contracts and that. And yes, there was no salary cap at the time. But the Maple Leafs made an offer of $8 million plus for Bobby Holík, if you'll recall.
Yes.
Now that's, think about this for a second. So Bobby Holík, 19 years ago, was getting offered and subsequently signed for, I think, 8, 5, or 9 with the New York Rangers.
The Rangers. Yeah.
Think about this. So 19 years ago, he signed for $3.5 million more than Nathan McKinnon. And, you know, almost a couple million more than William Nylander. So it kind of speaks to the way that the entire price, you know, salary structure, and that obviously there is a salary cap. Yeah, but you know, you have to put perspective that there was a time where some of these contracts were way more inflated. And I'll bring up another one, and I don't have the salary there, but I know you'll remember it, being the hockey historian that you are. Oh, remember the big ticket that Marty Lapointe signed for?
Oh, man.
For one of those yeah.
That's remember right. That? Yep. And so, you know, and based on the production, we all said, man, the intangibles better be amazing here.
Yeah. So, you know, I understand it's a different era. I understand we have a salary cap, but sometimes you have to, and I'm going to use that word again, perspective. And, you know, having said that, my head just spins when I think what Nathan MacKinnon is going to get in his next contract.
And deserves every penny. Let me share a quick Bobby Holik story with you, because I got Bobby and I became friends post career, and so Bobby was up here with me in Stouffville for a couple of days, and we were going to go watch an Oshawa Generals game, and we were driving there, and I was going to go introduce him to Jeff Toohey and a couple of guys, and I said, you know, how come it never worked out in New York with you? And I said, I know you talked to Toronto. He goes, yeah, you know, they had this idea of me and Sundin, 1 and 2 up the middle, and that was going to be blah, 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 blah. And he said, well, here's the difference between the New Jersey Devils and the New York Rangers. Here's why it didn't work out. And I know you know Bobby, so you can hear the accent and you can hear the deadpan's eyes. Bobby Holik turns to me and he says, here's the difference. If Bobby Holik is your third line center, we're going to win the Stanley Cup. But if Bobby Holik is your first line center, Jeff, we're not going to win the Stanley Cup. And the problem in New York was Bobby Holik was your first line center. He's like the most honest guy about himself, but he's got a beautiful ranch in Wyoming and his daughter loves horses. And thank you to the New York Rangers for that. Zies, we're out of time. We're up against it. Thanks as always for stopping by, sharing great memories and great insight on the Maple Leafs. Really appreciate it, pal.
Thanks, Jeff. I hope you and your family stay safe along with all the listeners, and great to be on, and give me a ring anytime. Have a great week.
You're a gentleman, a scholar, and a judge of good liquor. Thank you so much, Dr. Zeb.
Thanks, man.
There he is, Mike Zeisberger from NHL.com. Got to get out for the break. Coming up, Mike Rupp and Kelly Rudy. Keep it here. Back to the program. Welcome to Hour 2. Thanks to our Hour 1 guests, Mike Zeisberger and Elliot Friedman. Coming up this hour, Mike Rupp from the NHL Network and Kelly Rudy from Hockey Night in Canada. Lots of things to get to with both these gentlemen. For Kelly, we'll start on the Calgary Flames page, and I'm sure we're going to end up at some point talking about goaltenders. Because I've got a million questions, and Kelly's got a million answers, and he's probably going to roll his eyes a couple of times at me because I ask Kelly goofy questions, and he's a very polite person, so he always humors me. And I know inside he rolls his eyes, and that's okay. he's always a real gentleman about, like, oh, God. Jeez, Merrick, another dumb question. Okay. There are no stupid questions, Jeff, only stupid people asking questions. Kelly Rudy coming up bottom of the hour. Mike Rupp from the NHL Network as well. News around the NHL today, a couple of things. The Pittsburgh Penguins announcing that both Sidney Crosby and Brian Dumoulin have COVID, and as such placed in COVID protocol. Also, the Nashville Predators announcing they'll retire the number of Pekka Rinne. It will go to the rafters. The first player's number retired in Nashville. If you've ever had, well, first of all, just a supreme, a fantastic goaltender. This is going to happen on February the 24th at Bridgestone Arena, by the way. Number 35 goes up. Fantastic goaltender. Someone, which by actually, you know what, it'd be good to talk to Kelly about at the bottom of the hour. A goaltender that liked to get a lot of shots in early. I remember one of the things that someone in Nashville told me when I was at a Nashville practice, and this is when Peter Laviolette had taken over the team. And I said, who's feeling it the most? And he said, Pekka Rinne. And I said, why is that? And he said, Well, this is a team that under Terry Crisp was all about, or under Terry Crisp, under Barry Trotz was, by the way, Terry Crisp last season as an announcer in Nashville, under Barry Trotz was very much into shot suppression, just not allowing shots to get to the net at all. And Peter Laviolette was, Barry Trotz was let it get to the net. Laviolette was more about shot suppression, had it backwards there. But keep it from a safe zone is Trotz's system. And he said to me, like, Rene's struggling because he needs a lot of shots early. He needs to warm up with the puck. He needs to be able to feel it to get into the game. Right now, you know, we'll go through stretches of 8 or 9 minutes and he won't get a shot on net. And that makes it that much more difficult. I know for some that may be counterintuitive. You want to limit the amount of shots on net for your goalie. But Rene always liked a bunch of them. Real good goaltender. Real nice guy off the ice as well. True gentleman of the game. And, you know, Nashville, who for the longest time as well, before they were the defenseman factory in the NHL, they were the goalie factory. And Pekka Rene was the best of the bunch. Real good guy. Real great goaltender. His becomes the first number in franchise history retired by the Preds. From around the NHL last night, from a Canadian point of view, Montreal beats Detroit 3-0. Nick Suzuki with 3 assists. Jake Allen with 22 saves. Jonathan Drouin catches a Brett Kulak slap shot high. Leaves the game. Indications are today he's okay after going to hospital yesterday. Tough one for the Ottawa Senators. They drop a 5-4 decision to the Minnesota Wild. The Sens now have lost 5 of their last 6. The Maple Leafs beat the Vegas Golden Knights. Just talked to Zeisberger about that. 4-0 is the final score there. Calgary's winning streak has come to an end. The 6-game winning streak. They lose to the Nashville Predators, who have now won 4 in a row. Matt Duchene with the OT winner there. And also should mention the Winnipeg Jets. We talked to Elliot about this in the first hour. The Winnipeg Jets yesterday, in action against the Dallas Stars, they win in a shootout. Mark Scheifele heroics. 4-3 is the final score. Standing by for Mike Rupp, who's going to join us here in about 10 minutes' time. Meantime, our producer, Matt Marchese, is aboard. And Matty, one of the things I want to talk to Mike about, we'll get a lot of NHL issues in with him too. But he played on that Danbury team, and that Danbury Trashers Crime and Penalties documentary. I haven't seen it yet. I might be in the minority on this one. I haven't had time to see Crime and Penalties yet. But you have. What should I be in store for? Because I'll frame it this way. I got a good buddy of mine by the name of Troy Smith who played on that team, and I've heard tons of stories already about what it was like. But what was it for you that opened your eyes? First of all, did you know about this Danbury team before?
I feel like I remember the story about Mike Rupp going to play there during the lockout. Because if we recall, I believe Chris Chelios and Darian Hatcher also went to play in the United Hockey League that year too.
With during the lockout, yeah.
With the Motor City Mechanics, I think they were called, or something like that. But I do remember that part. So it was actually my dad that told me to watch it. And I'm sitting through this thing, and I texted you right after it was done. And I said, Jeff, this is right up your alley because it is Slapshot meets The Sopranos. And that is the best way
that
I can
describe
it. So it's
right up your, hang on a second. There's no bigger Sopranos fan that I know in my life, or I've ever known in my life, than you.
Yes,
this is perfect
correct.
For you, and you played junior hockey, or as you junior hockey players likes to call it, I played Junesies. So you played Junesies.
I've never said that.
You love The Sopranos. this is right up your alley.
So the reason, so my dad watches it. He tells me you got to watch it, and then he tells me, he's like, you know, there were parallels of when you played junior hockey, because Jeff, I played in the Outlaw League, the Rebel League, you know, and people will call it wasn't junior hockey, whatever. The first few years, it was absolutely junior hockey. After that, it went to hell. But anyway, we had, you know, a night where somebody claimed that somebody pulled a knife on another player in the hallway, and there were 8 cop cars outside the rink, helicopter flying above. We had police escorts out of arenas. It was like small time version of this Danbury team. So it really hit close to home. But the best part about this whole documentary is that the team is run by a 17-year-old high school student whose father felt bad because his son had basically a career-ending injury. They don't really get into detail about what it was, but
what
his father felt bad.
Did they say what the injury was?
They don't say. And so his father buys this pro hockey team, and you're kind of just like, okay, how is this going to go? But the best part is that they're offering money to players that I guarantee that other teams in the league cannot offer because of the business that the owner is in. And for those
that
what is
the business? Is it the Legitimate Businessman's Association?
Yeah, it's the legitimate business of garbage collecting, basically, like Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
So, and that's where it gets like, and Mike Rupp will be able to tell you the stories. Like, I was texting with him last night, and he said there were so many stories that didn't even get in there. And some of them that I heard were wild. Like, one guy has what they think is a career-ending leg injury, and the owner of the team goes and gets the guy's home number and home address and says, what do you want to do about this? Like, what?
What?
This is the type of stuff that, this is why it is Sopranos meets Slapshot, because it's minor league hockey owned by a guy who owns a garbage company. Like, it is, it's next level crazy. And wrapped up in all of that is a 17-year-old that is still in high school is running the organization. It's completely wild. And for those that haven't seen it, highly, highly recommend it, because it will blow your mind.
Normally when a father in hockey buys his son a fantasy camp, it's fantasy camp as a player. But as I'm hearing you talk about this, this is fantasy camp as an owner for the 17-year-old. Dad essentially bought a team so his kid could run it as fantasy camp.
Pretty much.
Because I know what I would have been like at 17 if I ran a hockey team. I'm sure you probably, and any of our listeners right now, maybe to themselves, thinking to themselves, well, what would it be like if I ran a hockey team at 17? Probably be a gong show. Make a lot of dumb decisions. But it sounds as if Dad bought him the hockey team to run like a fantasy camp, Matty. Is that accurate?
I would say it's pretty close. And it felt like there was an unlimited amount of funds that went along with this.
From the Legitimate Businessman's Association, of course.
Correct.
Established that. Yeah.
Exactly. So with these unlimited funds, this kid could basically kind of do whatever he wants. Like, the reason why he went and got Mike Rupp, because he went to the Stanley Cup final game, saw him score the winning goal, and then they announced the lockout, and he goes, we need to get that guy on our team. And it's like, what? Really?
That's against the Ducks, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, like, we need to get, and it's just, the whole story is, it's next level crazy, because it's, if it's not one thing, it's another thing. It doesn't seem to end. And that's the best part about it. And they only were around for 2 years, Jeff, but it seems like there's about a million stories that go along with this team that had a very, very short existence. Yeah. And
I don't think my buddy Troy overlapped with Mike, but he would have played against him in junior. But anyway, I want to talk to Rupper about the San Jose Sharks and a couple of other NHL issues, but we'll make sure we'll park some time to talk about Danbury of the UHL, or as they call it, the U-Haul, the U-Haul League, which during the lockout, I mean, you mentioned Chelios and Hatcher there. Avery went and played there too, didn't he? Avery went and played there. There are a few guys that went and played. Anyway, so one of the things that's that we're all waiting for and still have been waiting for, and I know it gets annoying to people because it's like, oh, you're just reporting that it's a non-story right now. It's just, we're all circling the tower, waiting for the plane to land. This is waiting for Godot. My goodness. The Jack Eichel situation, which has been a story going back to the summer, which has been a story really going back to last year's training camp when we started to hear the grumbling and the rumbling. And then there was the injury after the Casey Cizikas hit, and then everything fell apart after coach got fired, whispers of a trade request, needs surgery, there's an issue there. We're going to get on the Eichel page here in a couple of minutes, Matty, a little bit later on. In the meantime, our guest has arrived. So let's roll out the red carpet for a former Stanley Cup winner, scored the championship goal against the Anaheim Ducks, as we all know, from the NHL Network, a good friend, Mike Rupp. Mike, how are you today, bud?
I'm doing well, Jeff. How are you, bud?
I'm doing good. So Matty Marchese, my producer, and I, just throwing it around a little bit. You're on the horizon. I want to talk a lot about NHL issues. I want to get your thoughts on the San Jose Sharks, etc. But I haven't seen Crime and Penalties yet. I am going to watch it hopefully sooner than later whenever I can find some time in my day. You played on that Danbury team. I had a buddy of mine that played on the team as well. Would have played against you in junior, but I don't think you overlap. I got the name of Troy Smith, became an OHL coach for a couple of different teams afterwards. And so he's told me about a million stories. But from your point of view, I mean, I'm sure you have a million stories yourself too. When you watched Crime and Penalties, what came to your mind? Like, what goes through someone who was actually there? Like, what goes through your mind as you're watching this thing?
Well, a lot. I mean, you watch it, and obviously I was there for part of the one season during the NHL lockout. So there was a lot of stories being thrown around as players, you know, just like any other team. You go out and you have a dinner, you have a beer after a game, and guys start flinging stories around. And it was kind of, during the time, you didn't really think anything of it. You just kind of consumed and playing hockey, and it was just, you laugh about certain things. So I guess when you start seeing this actually on the screen and seeing how some of these things shaped up, and it's kind of crazy. There's stories there that I knew, there's stories there that I didn't know, but I thought that the thing was the documentary is really well done, and it's just funny. I find that when you're watching, you know, I know from following you, Jeff, with you, whether it's book recommendations or movies, or I'm a big documentary fan. I find it when it's done really well, it's when you're supposed to like dislike somebody, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, you're watching this and you're thinking, well, this is run by Tony Soprano. This is a mobster. This is this. I'm not supposed to like this guy, but he's very endearing. I feel like that they captured that really well. It's the way they treated us as players. I mean, we were there to play hockey, man. We didn't know what the heck was going on, but to see it all come together was pretty entertaining. It's gotten quite a bit of legs as far as that documentary.
Well, so, you know, I always wonder about this because you're playing in the NHL at that point, and yeah, it's the NHL lockout, and everyone's looking for a place to play, and, you know, Chris Chelios and Darian Hatcher, Sean Avery, etc. End up there. And when I first heard that NHLers were playing in this league, my first thought is, there are going to be so many guys that try to make a name for themselves. Like, I was a guy that went after Mike Rupp. I was a guy that went after old man Chelios. I was a guy that went after... Like, did you find that guys... Like, I hate using the term nobodies for pro hockey players because I never made it in hockey. But players that were never going to make it in the NHL, who probably had no right being on the same ice as an NHLer, did you find that guys would go after you in that league?
Yeah, two parts to that. If you haven't seen it, look up Chris Chelios getting chirped in that league. It's one of the best things ever. But yeah, I think it's on YouTube, and there's someone, I don't even know who the guy is, some guy on the team's just chirping Chelly the whole time, and I'm just like, so I think you're susceptible for some of that stuff. As far as going there and fighting, that's actually one of the main things I told the owner, Jimmy Galante, when I talked to him about coming in. I said, hey, I played in the minors, and I know when a guy gets sent down, that whether it's challenging that player hockey-wise one-on-one or challenging them physically one-on-one, that's what's going to happen. You want to always show that you can play at that next level. So that was something that I had some concern because I wanted to go and play, get my legs moving. We're in the NHL lockout. I wasn't going down there to fight. And I remember he just said to me, at this time I didn't know really much about the team, and he goes, Michael, when you hang up this phone, I want you to go on the internet and I want you to look up our roster. Nobody will look at you. He just said, nobody will look at you. And I was like, oh, geez, okay. So I looked, and there was about six guys with over 250 penalty minutes, about 50 games into the season. And I started reading off some of the names, and I'm like, yeah. And no one did, man. They all stared at their skate laces when they played against the Denver Dragons.
Away from Crime and Penalties and onto the NHL right now, and I want to ask you about, you know, some of your bigger surprises that you've noticed. You know, you're just all around the 10 game mark right now, but I want to get your thoughts on the San Jose Sharks specifically. And they win again last night, and they're third in the division, and I know that many people, myself included, and they still might end up there, like, who knows, it's a long season. I don't know that many people expect them to be in this spot after 10 games. I certainly didn't, specifically when you add in the mixture of underperformance, aging players, big contracts, big personalities, and the Evander Kane situation on top of it. My expectations for the Sharks were really low. But I'll tell you, Mike, they're one of the teams that I can't stop watching. And again last night, and I love Mario Ferraro. One goal, 29 minutes on the ice yesterday. Reimer was good. Again, they've got seven guys out right now. Hurdle's got 3 points. Merkley picks up his first goal. I don't know what it is about San Jose, but I'm really enjoying watching them this year. Do you have a thought on what we're seeing from the Sharks so far?
Yeah, I think it's a team that's got pride, and it's showing here. And they're showing that they – I even look at it from the standpoint of just even Erik Karlsson's comments, and I read some stuff that he said prior to this year starting, or as the season has started, said he still considers himself a top-end player. And I think that's important. You got to believe that. I mean, I don't expect him to say anything else, but I've started to even watch his body language on the ice, and you're starting to see him do certain things. He looks like he's got a little bit of that swagger back, and I think that's really important, because not just for him individually, but he's looked up to on that team, and you've got to have guys that are going to kind of push the envelope. And I feel like this is a team that's probably sick of being kicked dirt in their faces by guys like us. Or, like I have. I mean, I'm just being honest. Like, they have some really difficult contracts to handle.
They
it doesn't mean those aren't good players. It's just the nature of the game and the way the game has been going. It just doesn't look like it favors them. But they got something to say about it, and I agree with you. I think that's those are the things I want to watch. I want to see that pushback. We're seeing in the situation Timo Meier starting to finally kind of grab a hold and take that next step in his career. He's always showed that he's had that ability, but not consistently enough. So I like this group. It's a fun group to watch, and I hope they keep it up. I really do.
Favorite team to watch right now is who for Mike Rupp?
My favorite team to watch right now, I probably have to say it's really tough. I'll give you two. I'll give you one on the top end and one maybe undercover one. Florida Panthers, okay. I love watching. They got a little bit of everything. I love the way they play stylistically, and they've got, again, just a little bit of everything. But as far as outside of that, when you start looking around, I would probably say I really like watching the Minnesota Wild. And
weird, eh? I'm the same way. It's bizarre.
Yeah, and it is weird. It's very weird, and it's not even that they're not blowing the doors off on the season. They're 6-3. It's really good, but they're not. There's games even at the first little bit. They were coming back in every game. Like, they were losing in the third period, but I think that's it, right? It's like the cardiac kids. It's like they're getting they're coming in there. They're showing that they're just. They're a little bit different now, and they have a different mindset now. So they're a really fun team to watch for me.
You know, it's amazing. They haven't had a player who can, pull fans out of their seats going back to Marian Gaborik. But Marian Gaborik was still playing on a team where Jacques Lemaire had bungee cords on everybody's hockey pants. And if you get too deep in the offensive zone, you would spring back to the bench, and Jacques would say, hey, easy now here. That's not how we're going to win hockey games. But it is amazing how one player, Kirill Kaprizov, and he's not even a center, and centers tend to be more dynamic in some ways, although that is very much changing in the NHL. Centers are kind of the ones that bring the fans out of their seats. But this winger, this 24-year-old Calder Trophy winger, has, I don't want to say single-handedly, because there are a lot of players that I like on this team. Like, I like Spurgeon a lot. I like Brodin a lot. I like Dumba a lot. Like, there's a lot of things to like there. But this one guy, it seems, Mike, has made this a watchable squad once again. Like, perhaps more watchable than they've ever been. Like, it is. Joel Eriksson-Ek, turning himself into
a great
two-way player, right? Marcus Foligno with his, 28% shooting percentage or whatever it is, which is just insane. He touches the puck and a red light goes off. Like, there's... I love the Adam Beckman story in training camp. Another great one. Like, there's a lot of reasons, Mike, to really like the Minnesota Wild this year. And it seems as if the whole thing revolves around Kirill Kaprizov, who's galvanized this entire organization. Agree, disagree.
And No, I agree. And the crazy thing is that Kirill, up until what, a day or two ago, didn't even have his first goal of the season. He's not even he's not even lighting it up right now, and there's still fun. So when he gets fully going, but I know what I think it is, Jeff. It's like, I think that that organization is, I mean, since they came into the league as the Minnesota Wild, they've always been one way. And there's been years where maybe the goals for goes up a little bit, but they're never viewed differently. Like, even to some degree, when you think of the New Jersey Devils still, people are like, oh, trap, boring, we don't like it. Dude, that team doesn't play like that. They haven't played like not that in years. You know what I mean? They're not the same. But it's like you get that label, and it's like that's a boring. I'll tell you what, for any listener that hasn't watched, and if you get the opportunity to, Minnesota's fun, man. They're fun to watch. And do they play with structure? Yeah. Do they play with accountability? Dean Evason's got them playing with accountability through and through in that lineup. But they play with a little bit of bite. And bite in their superstar in Kirill, like you take the puck away from him and he's gonna hack whack, lift your stick, get under your hands, try to do anything he can to get it back, and then they've got the bite with a guy like Marcus Foligno who leads, and we saw him with that Kevin Bieksa esque Superman punch a couple weeks ago. So they're really fun to watch, and I think this is big. I think they need to shed that because this is a new Minnesota Wild team that certainly looks different.
First of all, let's pause on that for 1 second with that Superman punch. We saw Kevin do it a couple of different times in the NHL. He says he got it from George St. Pierre. I work with him on Saturday nights, and we were talking about it the other day, and he said he first tried it when he was at Bowling Green. It was in a parking lot.
Bowling Green? What? Was it on the ice? Or
no, it wasn't.
Parking lot somewhere.
No, it wasn't. This is a parking lot, and he said, I had to, and in his words, and he could, Kevin, it's like he goes, and I had to fight this mutant at like 2 o'clock in the morning. It was like a big, thick 290, 300 pound guy. And he said, I got one chance to do this and then I'm getting out of here. And that's what he pulled out. But it's one of the more unique things we've seen in a hockey fight. And there was Foligno trying it again. What did you think the first time you saw, when you saw Bieksa try the Superman punch?
That takes a lot of kahunas to try it in a fight. And, and the reason why is because, you know, when you're going into a fight, and in the NHL, it's not like a street fight. You know, there is some rules and regulations. Maybe some don't think so, but there is. And when you're going into that fight, the other guy's trying to punch your face off, you know, and you're trying to punch his. So, like, to try something new, I always felt like that whenever I went into a fight. There'd be times where guys would just have my number. And I'm like, you know what? I got to start going in as a lefty with this guy and just try something different. And I would line up, and I'd line up. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go in lefty. I'm going to try to give him a different look. And then when it was time to grab, I'm like, nope, I'm going back to what I did. And then I get beat up again. You know what I mean? It's like, that's not the time to try things. And that's why, so when I saw Bieksa do it, I was like, wow, man, that's a lot of guts. And he pulled it off. He was really good. I actually talked to Foligno about it last week. We had him on my podcast, and he was like, yeah, I don't know. I didn't really like put much thought into it. And it was just in that moment. I think it was their home opener. He's like, I just figured, you know, Brendan Dillon's got a long reach. Let's go for it. I'm like, hey, you guys got more guts than I do, man. I would never have tried it.
It looks cool. At the end of it, doesn't matter. Whether it lands, like it didn't land clean on Dillon, it just looked cool on the ice.
It looks cool until the guy sidesteps it and just corks it right between the eyes.
Until the guy slips, and then here comes the left hook, and that's going to be trouble. You mentioned the New Jersey Devils a couple of seconds ago. I want to pause there a little bit and talk about the Devils because I'm with you. Like, this is a team that's clearly on the rise. You don't go out and pick up someone like Dougie Hamilton without starting to have eyes north in a very competitive and tough metropolitan division. I'm a huge Nico Hischier fan. Like, I think that this is, you know, we just mentioned Joel Eriksson-Ek in the conversation for the Selke Trophy every year. You know, pretty soon Nico Hischier's going to be one of those players as well. You know, it's tough not seeing Jack Hughes in the lineup right now for the New Jersey Devils. I know the news could have been worse, so thankfully it's not. But still, we're not going to see Jack Hughes for a while. This is a fun team to watch. Like, whether they win all their games, and they're not going to, but there's always a few moments in a New Jersey Devils game, whether it's, you know, Hischier does something, or listen, most recently a guy like Dawson Mercer, the kid, the former first round draft pick, comes in and does something. There's always moments in a New Jersey Devils game where you say, this is a really fun team to watch. And to your point, breaks every single myth that you have about how the New Jersey Devils play trap hockey, because they don't. They're defensively sound, but this is not the New Jersey Devils from years ago. This is, I should throw Ty Smith in there too. He's a real good player. This is a really fun New Jersey Devils team to watch.
They are. And they, having that team healthy, and that's a big part with Nico Ischier. And I love his game too. I think he's a guy you build the team around. And that's why he's got the C on his jersey. And you've got obviously Jack Hughes. Jack Hughes is dynamic, man. He has a, when the puck's on his stick, it's almost like there's a, it's like a persona that he's able to carry. And it's almost like a language that his body speaks when he carries that puck. He's really unique and he's confident in it. And that's one thing I really noticed with him that's really improved in his game. You know, and then they just have a lot of nice pieces in there. Dougie Hamilton was a huge, huge play by them. Some would argue, and I was one, I think you have to overpay to go get a guy if you're the New Jersey Devils. If you're not a contending team, you've got to become a contender some way. So they're trying to get a guy like that, a number one D-man. I think it's been fantastic for them. And they revitalized their back end. But then they've got some of those nice pieces you mentioned, like Mercer, and then Alexander Holtz just absolutely lighting up the American League. Just, he's got a great shot. So it's about being patient with those guys. He's got 5 goals in 4 games in Utica. So it's about just taking your time with those guys. I think that we all want to see the quick reaction, but the thing that hasn't changed in New Jersey, and that's what Tom Fitzgerald does a real job, good job with too, is just be patient. Just be patient with the kids. You know what I mean? And it's going to be a little bit of time, a little bit of growing pains here, but health is a big concern for them. The one big one I have for them, and I hope I'm dead wrong here, and I'm just looking at the way Patty Kane played the other night, and we know the comparisons with Jack Hughes. I'm nervous, and I heard coming into the draft that we heard those comparisons, but that Jack sometimes takes some hits. And Patty Kane, that's one thing, Jeff, when we've watched him, I don't know if I've ever seen Patty Kane get hit hard before. And the inventory that Patty Kane takes on the ice, we obviously know that he is aware where all of his teammates are. That's what makes him so great offensively. But he also knows where the other team is, all 5 guys on the ice. So I'm hoping that Jack Hughes can be okay in that area because, you know, size isn't their advantage. But, man, he's got some real weapons and vision out there when he has that puck.
Let me ask you this, because you played and I didn't. How much of that do you think is just the position? I know that Pat Kane doesn't play like a traditional winger, but he's still a winger. Jack Hughes, and we all know that, you know, center responsibilities are profoundly different than winger responsibilities. How much of the Hughes, you know, getting hit issue is just a byproduct of that's what happens when you're a center, and that's why... Listen, there isn't a long history of smallish centers in the NHL because remember going into that draft, the knock was they may be drafting him as a center, but there's no room for small centers in the NHL. How much of that issue do you think is just because of position, Mike?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, and the comparable that I have is there's a couple teams I was on where we'd be going to our pregame meal at a hotel, and we'd have like the conference room, whatever. That's where the meal was. And I'm always a guy, whether you're a group of people going in a restaurant, whatever, you go on your table, I always grab the seat that has the whole room in front of you, right? I don't want anybody behind me. I don't want, hey, maybe this ties into the mob hockey story from before. I want everybody in front of me. But you don't understand what I'm saying? Like, I used to argue, the guys on the team, we used to like race to that chair because we always would pick the same one. There could be 50 chairs in that room. We spot the one, and that's what we want because we want everything in front of us. And just think of playing positions that way, right? So as a winger, it's like I'm sitting in that part of the room in that restaurant. I can see everybody, right? The only thing behind me is the boards. Like, I could see where everybody is. But when you're at center, you got a lot of blind spots. You got a lot of people that are sneaking in behind you. You got a lot of people on both sides of you. So, yeah, I agree with that. I think that that's a fantastic point. The one thing that I will say, though, too, is I would love to see, because we hate seeing these hits from behind, these checks. We all want that done, and there has to be an onus on the guy delivering the hit. But I also would like there to be more education on, look at Patty Kane. When do you see Patty Kane cut back below the goal line? Like, his cutbacks are at the boards. Because why? Because he knows that there's no players at the boards, right? Like, his cutbacks are on the half wall. His cutbacks aren't in the neutral zone. He ain't cutting back in the neutral zone, because that's hockey 101. Like, you stop in the neutral zone, you're going to get hit. It's just a matter of time. And so it's about knowing those spots. So we saw Trevor Zegras in the same position. There's certain times where you got to bail on a play or just absorb the initial hit and not try to escape all the time. That's something Patty Kane is fantastic at. And I agree with you. It's probably due to his position, but he's really good at knowing the areas of the ice you can get away with it.
Excellent points. We're up against the clock. I could do this all day with you. Mike, thanks so much for stopping by. Great insight, and love the stories about Danbury as well. That's a guilty pleasure here.
Yeah, check it out. Check it out. Let me know what you think.
I'm gonna check out Crime and Penalties one of these days. Hopefully this weekend if I can squeeze some time. Thanks so much for this, Mike. Much appreciated.
Awesome. Anytime, Jeff.
There he is, Mike Rupp from the NHL Network. We've got to get out of here quick because Kelly Rudy's on the other side and want to park as much time for Kelly as we possibly can. From Hockey Night in Canada, Kelly Rudy joins me on The Merrick Show in a couple of moments across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Over to Dubé from the circle. Shoots off the post as the penalty comes to an end. Goal post just as the power play expired. No shots on goal. Back to the line, Tanev. Here's Shillington. Shillington scores! First of the year for Oliver Shillington. Couldn't have come at a better time. It's all tied up at two.
Rick Ball with the call. One of the finest in the business right there. Welcome back to the Jeff Merrick Show. We're talking about the Calgary Flames with our good friend Kelly Rudy from Hockey Night in Canada, Flames broadcast as well. Kelly, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
I'm doing well, Jeff, and you can tell by that call from Rick Ball that I'm pretty darn spoiled to work every night on a Flames game with Rick. And yeah, you're right, one of the world's best. But Jeff, before we start our discussion, I want to say you, fantastic job. I listen almost every day, but... and you do a great job, but yesterday's discussion or chat with Katie Strang was just must-listen radio. That was I felt like I was just sort of listening into a discussion, a very important discussion that you two were having, and it wasn't an interview. It was just a really frank, hard discussion. It was great because, you know, you were asking really important questions about how Katie's doing. And that was so important because when you cover heavy topics as she does, that has to take its toll also, right? And so that was really well done. As you know, I sent both of you a text. That was just fantastic. Got my day off to a great start.
First of all, thanks, and I'll pass all the praise on to Katie for that, because that was all her. I've known her going back to, you know, when she covered the Islanders, and I remember when she changed beats and they put her on the baseball assignment, and I would text her almost every week, you know, come back to hockey, Katie, we need you, come back to hockey. She's right? Become like a friend, a mentor. She's someone that I lean on and learn from, and I've asked her that question a number of times, Kelly. Like, Katie, how do you keep doing this? Like, I can, you know, a lot of us can sort of turn the story on and turn the story off and take care of ourselves. And I know you're a big mental health advocate as well yourself, and you know about, you know, taking care of yourself and you know, removing yourself from situation. Katie stays in there. And I've asked her so many times, like, this has to have an effect on you. And it does. Yep. But just like when we were talking about Sheldon Kennedy, this guy stays in the batter's box. You know, 20 years, he's been let down and disappointed. He still shows up and he still tries to help. And Katie's the same way.
I love Sheldon. We're neighbors now. But a year ago, he and his wife and their young child moved onto the same street as us. And so I see Sheldon often. In fact, he and his wife brought their youngster over for on Halloween on Sunday. So it was nice to get caught up a little bit with Sheldon. Great guy.
He, he's a very special man. I have all day for him, and we should all. And listen, even Kevin Cheveldayoff referencing him yesterday, talking about empowered bystander. Like that's Sheldon Kennedy. That's Sheldon Kennedy language right there, and I'm sure it was appreciated by all. I want to get to the Calgary Flames here. Can I ask you one thing about Wayne Gretzky quickly?
Sure.
So I was just talking to Mike Rupp about awareness on the ice. And we're talking we're talking about Jack Hughes. And I remember Marty McSorley told me a story where when we used to work together at Sportsnet, we were out having a drink after work. And I was just like I'd done with you a million times, ask you a million questions about Wayne Gretzky. And he said, one of the most rare pictures you will see is Wayne Gretzky skating along the bench. And I said, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, Wayne once told me he never liked skating along the bench because he needed to know who was coming on and who was going off at all times. Like he needed to be aware of everything around him. And he needed a vision, not just of the ice, but of the bench to see who was coming on and who was coming off. I know you pay attention to a lot of this stuff. We can hear it on the broadcast, Kelly.
Yeah.
When I say, you know, Wayne Gretzky and vision on the ice, off the ice, do any stories pop to your mind?
Oh, definitely. The moment you said that about awareness, I think I've shared this with people before, but the most unique thing I've ever encountered in a hockey player was with Wayne. And it wasn't on the ice, but it was when about half an hour before warm-up. So we're all in the dressing room. We're getting ready, right? Everybody at their own pace. Usually Wayne was about – he'd come into the dressing room about 20 minutes before warm-up and start getting ready. Mm-hmm. And he had this mind that I had never encountered before. And trust me, Jeff, as you know, I started out with the Islanders, a team that had just won four consecutive cups. And those that was a brilliant team with the – just superstar after superstar. And so I was able to, live that life also and see how those guys thought the game. But Wayne would sit down, and this would be a regular conversation. He'd sit down and he'd go, okay, let's say we're playing at home that night, Jeff, to Vancouver. He'd go, this win is so important because Edmonton is in MSG tonight. Tomorrow they're on the island. In 3 days they're in Philly, and then they finish off their trip in New Jersey, and I think they're going to win three of those games. So, and then he'd go through everybody in our division, what their schedule was, how he thought they might do in the upcoming games, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, a week from now, I have no idea where I am. I have no idea if we're on the road. And he knows everybody's schedule far in advance of everybody. Wow. It was mind-blowing to know how this guy thinks the game. And that was important to Wayne, right? Like, he had to be on top of things. And so for me to see that, I remember the very first time that he started going through everybody's schedule and how he thought they were going to do. I remember Wayne sat about three stalls away from me, and I remember looking over to my left, like, is this guy for real? How does he have all these different thoughts and still focus on the game at hand?
A remarkable athlete, and still there's layers of Wayne that I'm sure we still don't even know about to this day. Okay, Calgary Flames. Here we are. Everyone's right around the 10 game mark, and the Calgary Flames sit second in the Pacific. After nine games, they have 14 points. The Oilers do as well, but they have the tie break based on the wins. I don't know that many, because I didn't, expect to see Calgary in this position after nine games. And I want to focus in on the players with you, Kelly. Yeah. I know the default is always you got to have the good goalie, right? If you have the goalie, it's 70% of your team. If you don't, it's 100. We all know the cliches. How do the Calgary Flames find themselves in this position nine games into the season?
Because they're playing up to expectations. Last year was a disaster. So I thought on paper, the team that they put on the ice last year had a really good chance coming out of the Canada North Division. And they didn't. They were just, they fell well below anybody's expectations. I was very disappointed in their overall team play. And this year, they are playing at the level they should be. And also, maybe more importantly, when their play does dip just a little bit, that's exactly what it is, just a little bit. It doesn't go from the top of the mountain to a huge valley, and then they're trying to dig their way back up to the top. It just doesn't work that way. And so I give the players a lot of credit for being extremely focused. Now, I'm going to make a tiny bit of an excuse. Jeff. And, and you know, Tampa, they had no problem winning the Stanley Cup, and they got through all the hardship of the pandemic and the bubble and self-isolation and so on. But I was leaving the arena yesterday, and I ran into one of the Flames players, and he'll go nameless. I don't know if he wants to share this, but he and I were having a chat about last year. And he looked at me in the most sincere way, and he talked about how difficult it was during the pandemic. And I could tell in his eyes, like, he was that was not a happy place for him to talk about. And so I think that mentally it was a real challenge for certain players and certain teams. And I sort of add a little bit to the Calgary Flames situation because of what they went through. Now, certainly other teams didn't have the same sort of issues, but I think that is a real factor.
You know what? It's interesting you mentioned that, Kelly, because and I know that Philadelphia was sensitive to this around Carter Hart specifically. But yes. one of the things that we kept hearing about last year, and I think it makes a lot of sense, where a lot of veteran players will have families last season, would have families to go to after a game. Younger players didn't. They went back to their condo, or they went back to, you know, wherever, and that was it. There wasn't any going out with their teammates. There wasn't the family to come home to. And a lot of players, and understandably so, younger players, I think, really struggled. And I think we can look at a lot of younger players around the NHL, and Carter Hart really does stand out, because that was not Carter Hart that we saw last season. I think the Carter Hart we're seeing this season is a lot closer to the real Carter Hart. And I look at Carter Hart last season, I say a lot of that was probably because, you know, where did he go after games? He went home, and he was alone, and he lived between his ears. And I mentioned, you know, mental health and, you know, taking care of yourself off the top of this conversation, Kelly, and that's challenging when you don't have anyone around you. You just have yourself.
That's 100% accurate, Jeff. And I was told that last year, it didn't occur to me actually about that. And then when it was brought to my attention about the young players just going home to basically their own place with self-isolation, and that's a difficult place for anybody to exist. I also think that they never had, and this applies to all the teams again, so I'm not giving the Flames the benefit of the doubt in this. The players, but this is an overall picture of how difficult it was for everybody. The players never had one single day off. Like, every single day, they had to show up at the arena, even if they didn't have a practice or a game, because they had to do the testing, right? The rapid testing. So every day, you know, for instance, here in Calgary, you know, one of my great pleasures on a day off, I like to drive out to the mountains. It's my happy place, right? So I go out to Banff, or I go to Kananaskis and clear my mind. Well, they couldn't do that because they had a rapid test at, say, 9:30 in the morning or whatever time that was, right? And so, you know, you couldn't just completely escape from the game. And I think that's healthy for all of us. You know, you and I and a lot of our friends in the industry, we work a ton, but we also look forward to those days off where we can truly escape and make ourselves healthier again, right? So I think that the players in the NHL had a really difficult time with that. And I'm hoping in a year or two or something, it becomes even more normal for everybody.
Amen to that. You know, I don't think that there's ever going to be anything done with the schedule. I think, you know, once the players signed off on linkage, that was it for even entertaining the idea of fewer games, even if it's positioned as a player safety issue. Once the salaries were married to hockey related revenue, that was it. The games are going to be the games. I just hope that there are more times for not just players, but everybody involved in the game to take a pause and walk away. And to your point, Kelly, go find that happy place where they can recharge themselves. Speaking of happy place, I don't know which line is more impressive to me in Calgary, Gaudreau, Lindholm, and Tkachuk, or Coleman, Backlund, and Pitlick. Which one stands out? Which one stands out more to you, Kelly?
You're putting me on the hot seat. I'm. That's such a difficult one.
They do different things. They do different things.
100%, right? And so the Lindholm line is. I got to say, I'm not sure. I guess Johnny Gaudreau, the year he had 99 points, was remarkable, but maybe because he didn't play quite at that same level the last two seasons, the way that he's playing, I think he's probably at that same level or even at a better level than I've ever seen him. And so when you have maybe the smartest player on the team in Lindholm, and then you have Tkachuk, who's always in the battle. That's hard to overlook. But the backline line with Coleman, by the way, he has exceeded expectations. And then Pitlick has been amazing on the right side of Michael Backlund. So I don't know if I can separate the two, who's more important or who's I know who's more dynamic, and it's the Lindholm line. And the Dubé line also, although Richie was, I don't know if you saw the game last night.
He left the game after the fight.
Yeah,
that was a tough one.
Their play has dropped just a little bit, and Daryl talked about that yesterday morning. So, you know, I think the lines are what they are to a certain degree. But on the back end, Rasmus Anderson is having a brilliant year. And the player that stands out to most of us that have been around the team for a long time is Oliver Shillington. Frankly, Jeff, I had no idea he could play at this level at a consistent basis. We had seen stretches where he, for lack of a better term, he might tease you a little bit. Like, we've always known that he can skate, right? He's a world-class skater. That's never been an issue. But he would play well, and then he'd make a big blunder, and I don't know if that affected him mentally. But he wouldn't seem to be the same sort of player. But right now he's playing free, and he looks as though the game is coming naturally. And what Dennis Potvin taught me many, many years ago is, Jeff, do your thinking in the afternoon, and when you get to the rink, just play. You know, don't think. And that's the key for a lot of these players, and Oliver certainly is in that situation right now.
Be in the game, not of the game. That's very zen of you, Kelly, on this day. I like that.
Listen to Kelly because he's zen.
You're a good man, Kelly Rudy, and always a delight catching up with you. Be well. Thanks for the kind words. I'll deflect everything to Katie Strang, who's brilliant. Thanks so much for stopping by, as always. Have a great day, Kelly.
My pleasure. I'll see you on the weekend, Jeff.
There he is, Kelly Rudy, from Hockey Night in Canada, former NHL netminder. A lot we went over there. Whether it's the Calgary Flames or whether it's Wayne Gretzky, or some kind words to the great Katie Strang from The Athletic. A thanks to Kelly Rudy from Hockey Night in Canada for stopping by. Thanks to Mike Rupp from the NHL Network for pausing his day for us today. Mike Zeisberger from NHL.com and Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada. Special thanks to our producer Matt Marchese and our technical op Lance Kennedy. We are back tomorrow with more of the Merrick Show. Enjoy the games this evening. Like yesterday, there was 9. That was a lot of fun. Like, that's a manageable amount of games, right? Tonight, we don't have that many, but there are some beauties, including Scotiabank Wednesday Night Hockey, the Preds and the Oilers, the Canes and the Hawks, the Jackets and the Avs, your nightcap, the Blues, and the Los Angeles Kings. Back tomorrow with the Merrick Show.